This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home, and it's a little cool today. We've been having unusually warm weather. And then, surprise, it has dipped down. I think the high today was supposed to be something like 22. And right now, it is, So at 2 o'clock this afternoon, it was 17 degrees. It's still 17 degrees. So a little cool. So I am going to turn on the... I know it's not that cold if you live in Minot, North Carolina. It's cold for us. So I am layered up. And we're going to be making the little drive home, and hopefully all the roads are going to be good. I think most of the roads, the snow has been, you know, kind of pushed off by the tire action all through the day and yada yada, so I think we're good. So it shouldn't be too bad, but coming in this morning, I was just kind of puttering. I was not going very fast. I actually went through one intersection where I didn't quite get stopped, but it was a four-way stop, and I just sheepishly kept going. So, anyways, today, sadness. I let the flesh get me today. Last weekend, my beloved and I ran down to Branson just for a little getaway. She felt like she didn't ever really get a vacation because we had people coming over to the house, so she was cleaning and getting everything ready, and she hasn't really been feeling that well. And, you know, so about Thursday of last week, I was chatting with her, and she said, "I just feel like I haven't had a vacation." I said, "Well, sweetie, do you want to go down to Branson?" Which was the right thing to say, because apparently she had already been looking at hotel rooms. So, yay for me there. So, we went down to Branson just Friday night, Saturday night, over New Year's. And we came back on Sunday. And I just got in my writing wherever I could, you know, around the edges. So, I'm a little farther back than I thought I would be. But, you know what? That's fine. It'll all get done. It will get done. So, while we were down there, as I am wont to do, I visited the Van Heusen store, and I usually swing in there. Well, if last year was any indication, I had swung in there twice last year, just to see what shirts they had, and my pants had started to get a little threadbare here and there, because I bought two pairs of pants there 2 years ago, and I wear them all week, every week. And so I thought, well, I need to get some new pants, and I got a couple extra shirts, and blah, 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 blah. Anyways, the new pants, apparently the pockets don't really, when you're sitting down kind of at an angle, the pockets are constructed to where stuff falls out of them, which is not great. I mean, they're nice pants. I like them. Van Heusen has everything up to like 80% off in their outlet store. But there is this small problem, and apparently while I was driving to work, my phone slipped back out of my pocket, went down on the side of the car seat, and as I was driving around and skating through the intersection and doing some of those types of things, my phone pushed farther and farther in to where it was like underneath and back there, underneath my seat. So I get to my major client, I'm bustling out, it's cold, I'm actually a little late behind because, you know, I'm driving slow, blah, 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 blah. And as I'm walking up to the main door of the building I work in to push my card against it and get in, I'm just like, this doesn't feel right. Sure enough, I had a whole bunch of stuff that I was trying to carry at the same time. I kind of elbowed my left pocket, and my phone wasn't there, and I was like, what? Okay, so I'm hurrying anyways. It's cold. I know I've got challenges to address. You know, so that's okay. I'm not exactly quieted. Get in. Oh, man. I must have left my phone at home. I must have left my phone at home. That's all I could hear in my head. And I was like, no, leave my phone at home. I knew I had left the house a little frantic as well, but I mean, this thing of picking my phone up and sticking it in my pocket is just second nature. I was thinking, why in the world did I not stick my phone in my pocket? So, surprisingly enough, Jesus did make it through all of that noise. I was like, no, it must have fallen out of my pocket because these are new pants. So I trundle back out to the car. I'm looking. I don't see it. I look down on the side because I'm thinking it must be down there because Jesus has pinged me. Ding! It's down there. Look there. Ugh. And I look around, but I even got pinged. Oh, it might be farther in. And I kind of went around the back and made a half-hearted attempt at feeling, and then I didn't really follow through. So then I trundle back upstairs, and I call my beloved. Sweetie, I think I left my phone at home. She said, well, I'll bring it to you. That's fine. Okay, well, that's fine. You know, because we were having a heating guy come out to our little rock house rental property, and I needed to be able to take his phone call and blah, blah, blah. So now I've got my beloved looking all around at home, trying to find my cell phone. She wrote me back. She said, sweetie, I've looked everywhere. I've tried calling it. I don't hear it. Are you sure it didn't fall out of your pocket into the car? And I said, well, I'll go look again. And so I get out there. I'm looking around. I don't see it. I'm looking around. And all of a sudden, I hear my phone ringing inside my car. Oh, before that, this is where it really gets sad. I mean, it really gets sad at this point. Because I thinks to myself, well, another ping. Ping! Okay, you didn't listen the first time, but ping! You have location services turned on your phone. I do have location services turned on my phone. So I go over to Google, I open the map. Sure enough, it's showing the drive that I made. And the last time it's registered is 10:30. This is like at 10:45. It has registered at 10:30, and it says it's sitting out there in my car. And I'm like, it is in my car. Or it's here somewhere within 10 meters of my car or something. So I go out. I'm fishing around. I'm trying to find it. I hear my phone ringing. I'm like, where is it? You know, I finally get down in there enough where I can see it. By this time, I've missed the phone call. It is the heating guys. They have a restricted number. He leaves a message. He says he'll call me back later. So, okay, at least I have my phone now. So now I have to write my beloved, I'm so sorry, sweetie. Sorry, sorry, sorry. It was in the car. Sorry to have troubled you. So, I hate it when the flesh gets me. Because if I had just taken a beat, you know, take a beat, fished my arm in farther under my chair, I would have felt it, but it was back in there pretty far. But I could have found it if I had just worked a little harder. But, you know, I'm driving past a car, and there... I'm driving past a house that it looks like there's a room above their garage, and there's little windows in there, and they've got like a disco ball or something going in there. So I don't know if they've got a teenager in there and he's got a light show or she's got a light show going. I've never seen it do that before. Anyways, I have my phone. Thank you, Jesus. I have my phone. And if I had done a better job, my wife wouldn't have been going all over our house trying to find my phone for me. I hate it. I hate it when I do that. Anyways, so the moral of this story is, take a beat, calm down, listen. Because even if I would have remembered, I have location services turned on my phone, which I know that. I would have just, and then I would have never called her. I would have said, it's got to be in the car. And I would have gone and looked again. Anyways, done is done, but you can always learn a lesson from done. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, I had a breakfast with a buddy. And I have buddies from a fairly, well, I have representations of fairly wide belief sets in my buddies, which I like. I like, you know, I have people who are Democrats. I have people who are Republicans. We talk. I like that. So this particular buddy, we were chatting and, you know, the idea is not new with me, but certainly I had talked about this before. I remembered this idea of the way the electorate was being treated in this election. Mostly how non-liberal Democrats were being treated in this election. I thought, this is not a good idea. What was interesting about that, I don't know if you remember, and I've probably mentioned it, there was a YouTube video where all of these stars got together and made this big video about how they were voting for Hillary and how you shouldn't vote for Trump. And the whole thrust of the video, when I was watching it, it seemed to me that the whole thrust of the video was, you know, we're really important people. And you should listen to us and do what we tell you to do, because we took out time just to tell you that you should vote for Hillary. Oh, thank you very much. We appreciate that. I saw one conservative person putting on there. It was something. This is not nice. It was something like, yes, thank you very much. You know, you need to understand that you act and we're entertained and we appreciate you entertaining, but we don't need you commenting on the rest of our lives. So why don't you just shut your pie hole and go back to entertaining us? I thought, well, there you go. That's not something I would say, but, you know, I found it amusing. But that attitude, I was talking to my friend and saying to him that the farther I get away from the election, the more it does seem to me that the Democrats lost the day because they failed to continue having a conversation. And I was talking to him about the fact that in our lives there's always going to be people that don't agree with us, that see things differently than we do. But what's most important is to have a conversation. To listen, to respond, to reason together. That's what's most important. And I told him at the time that I felt the Democrats, and if you want to call them the liberal elite, had really failed in that respect over the last many years. And we had a very nice conversation about that. So, a couple of days ago, I came across this article, and it said that this interview happened, I think it was the day after the Electoral College voted, and so it was, you know, last week, and it's Anthony Bourdain. You may or may not be familiar with Anthony Bourdain. Personally, I find him a fascinating guy. He's kind of a renegade chef, and he travels around the world. He has, some of it's on Netflix at this point, Parts Unknown, Parts Unknown and No Reservations are a couple of his travel shows, and he just travels and eats and talks about these different places. And there was a New Zealand-based writer, Alexander Bisley, had an interview with Anthony Bourdain, and they, by phone, and they got on the subject of Donald Trump's election. And he said he called him the day after the Electoral College confirmed Donald Trump as president. And Bourdain started talking about how that he felt that the thing that gave Donald Trump the election was the utter contempt, quote, the utter contempt with which privileged Eastern liberals, such as myself, discuss red state, gun country, working class America as ridiculous and morons and rubes. And he feels like that's what the problem was. I mean, he is, you know, they ask him, are you concerned about Trump? And he responded, as you would expect, what am I not concerned about Trump? Whenever one lives in the world, wherever one lives in the world right now, I wouldn't feel too comfortable about the rise of authoritarianism, which there is. There is this response to fear, which is the rise of the strongman, which I'm weaving that into Windfall. I mean, that's coming. This fascinating year ahead of us. Bourdain said, I think it's a global trend and one that we should be concerned about, or one that should be of concern to everyone. So anyways, but he was talking about, the interviewer said, I'm running out of my light, because it's late. I got away late. He says, you're a liberal. What should liberals be critiquing their own side for? And he said, there's just so much. He said, I hate the term political correctness. He said, the way in which speech that is found to be unpleasant or offensive is often banned from universities, which is exactly where speech that is potentially hurtful and offensive should be heard. Well, that's a different approach. Because, you know, now we've got cry rooms and we've got safe spaces and, you know, we've got, you can't say anything that might trigger a person and blah, 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 blah. He said, the way we demonize comedians for use of language or terminology is unspeakable, because that's exactly what comedians should be doing, offending and upsetting people and being offensive. Comedy is there, like art. One moment, turning the corner. Comedy is there, like art, to make people uncomfortable and challenge their views, and hopefully they have a spirited yet civil argument or a conversation. So anyways, and this is basically what I was saying to my buddy. I said, if you are going to decide you are going to take a high position and look down and criticize and condemn and belittle everyone who doesn't see things your way, you will end conversation immediately. And once you end the conversation, you don't stand a chance of ever allowing someone or helping someone to see a different viewpoint. Because flesh breeds flesh, and spirit breeds spirit. And so if you condemn or are condemning in your tone, the other person's flesh is gonna react to that, it will escalate, it will be over. On the other hand, it's really hard to fight against love. And so if you speak from the spirit, even if the other person's viewpoints are offensive, just don't let your flesh get away from you. Speak calmly, speak succinctly, make good points, keep the conversation going. That's the most important thing. If you are ever going to persuade, you have to keep the conversation going. And I think, just from what I have seen, that several years ago, at some point, the Democrat, and I am neither Democrat or Republican. I consider myself to be an independent. But several years ago, the Democrats and what has been come to know as the liberal elite, they just decided they were right and everybody who didn't agree with them were idiots. And that never wins out in the end. And I think one of the things that we saw in this election was this idea that there had been a breakdown in the conversation. Now, what's fascinating to me about this, and I have seen this in other places, even when you have that conversation with people about the need to continue conversations, even when the people you are having the conversation about conversation absolutely agree with you, what can happen, and often does, is as you continue to have the conversation about it, eventually, it's fascinating to watch, eventually the conversation will take a left turn, and as you are talking, and as they are responding, the other person will take a left turn and slide right back into that condemning phraseology, that sneering, that belittling. And at that point, again, you should really just keep your flesh under control and smile. And you may want to say, yeah, well, but see, maybe that's the problem right there. Or you just go on and find another topic. And what was really interesting to me about all of this is that after Anthony Bourdain condemned all of this liberal elite disdain for gun-toting America, after he said, I spent a lot of time in gun country, God-fearing America. You know, there are a blank lot of nice people out there who are doing what everyone else in this world is trying to do. The best they can get by. I'm just going to go ahead and, I have completely lost my light, so I'm just going to go ahead and pull up on my pad here, and then I'll go get my mail after this, and then we'll be done. He said that the best they can do to get by, they take care of themselves and the people they love. When we deny them their basic humanity and the legitimacies of their view, however different they may be from ours, when we mock them at every turn and treat them with contempt, we do no one any good. Nothing nauseates me more than preaching to the converted. The self-congratulatory tone of the privileged left just repeating and repeating and repeating the outrages of the opposition. This does not win hearts and minds. It does not change anyone's opinion. It only solidifies them and makes things worse for us. We should be breaking bread with each other and finding common ground wherever possible. I fear that is not what we've done. Okay. Okay. All right. So, okay. So, and I actually agree with all that. Well, so, then the reporter starts talking about, you know, Bill Mayer, and says, yeah, I find him insufferably smug. And then the reporter goes on to say, in your new cookbook, Appetites, you have a section called Big Effin' Steak. In Kitchen Confidentials, you wrote about vegetarians, someone who doesn't agree with him. Quote, to me, life without veal stock, pork fat, sausage, organ meat, demi-glaze, and even stinky cheese is not a life worth living. Vegetarians are the enemy of everything good and decent in the human spirit and an affront to all I stand for the pure enjoyment of food. Yeah. So, you know, you can have these conversations and you can conceptualize that you should really not just say things that are offensive to people so that you can keep the lines of communication open. But boy, that flesh, that flesh, it is just waiting to get you riled up. And if you're not careful, while you might be all highfalutin and just saying how great you are about keeping the conversations open, you may also find stuff coming out of your mouth so easily that in fact is going right back to that thing of condemning and belittling and calling people idiotic, yada, 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 yada. And I'm getting my mail, because I don't need to read anymore, because I'm just going to blab until I'm done now. And, you know, I find myself falling into that trap as well. So let us be on guard. Let us always be on guard. Let our words be seasoned with salt, that we keep conversations open and going, that we listen to those, even those we disagree with, and that we make every attempt, as I was mentioning to my friend in that breakfast, that we make every attempt to see through to the humanity of the people that we're sitting across from or that we're commenting on. You know, this is one of the things, I'm backing into my garage, this is one of the things that, frankly, the Pharisees were not good at. They did not see through to the humanity of the people around them. Instead, they went into the temple and said, "Oh Lord, thank you that I am not like this publican." And that is not what Jesus recommends for our lives. He recommends that we see through to the humanity of people, that we cherish them as his beloved, and that we find ways to keep the conversation open, because by doing that, no matter how offensive their behavior, by keeping the conversation open, we give ourselves the best chance to actually be effective. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Just have to find the little button where I say off. Have a good week.